Well, hello again there, folks. So I had a few people ask us what happened to the audio. They were saying that they missed my voice, and they missed the Morgcast or the videos. And I thought that was really nice, and it deserved a bit of a response. I've actually been busy quite a bit, and in my own private life, I'm trying to organise something so that I can do more audio better in the future. And then there's also been a thing where I've been helping my brother, who is one of these people who are going to try and work a lot less going forward, which is this new trend we've seen. And I think it's interesting because both these things touch on something which I touched on in a recent Substack article, and I'll come on to that as well, just the sort of the move to Substack, the re-emergence of blogging and writing is a thing. So I'm not really, today I'm not really in it to give any particular political hot takes or anything, just some wider trends that I've noticed. And I was planning on writing separately on a lot of these issues, and I thought, well, I've done this before, I'll just sort of bundle it all in together and have like a more general conversation, a more of one of my rambles, as I like to say. Because what I've noticed happening, I recently wrote an article, and I alluded at the end to something what I called the great turning away, which is what sometimes things kind of stick at the back of your mind almost subconsciously, and then you think that there's something here, but it hasn't really fully formed in my thoughts or as a trend. I'm not sure that it's something or if it's nothing. But then you begin to see more and more examples of it. You begin to see more and more evidence of something happening and something changing in the culture or how people are going about their daily lives. And you realise, like, actually it's around you, like, in the real world. So I was involved with a lot of heavy work recently with one of my brothers, where he's going to try and move towards the homesteading thing. So this isn't a thing that you just see on the internet. My brother's very much a normie, very much a 9-to-5 family guy. And he's decided that he's had enough. I'm not exactly sure what the financial situation is. Maybe he's going to be working a lot more from home. But at any rate, he got me involved with kind of cutting away and doing a ton of work on his garden to maximise how much space he has for planting his own crops or putting raised beds there or whatever it happens to be. And I actually really enjoyed it because it was a sort of thing where I mainly see him a few times a year, and then at Christmas or whatever. And you kind of bond again. Even that seems like a bit of a corny term. But I mean, I was mainly called in to do the donkey work with like the worst garden tools you can imagine. And it was quite heavy stuff. And one of the things I realised as well was that because something was going on, it then drew like mainly the women, to be honest, where they were coming along with like sandwiches and they were snooping around and they kind of wanted to get involved, though obviously not to do any of the actual donkey work like I was doing. But then my sister got involved to do a lot of admin work to do with his expanding garden and all of this kind of thing, and getting in touch with the council and seeing what's allowed. And what is that? There's a special term where if you're allowed to build some places and planning permission, whatever it was. And I thought this is strange because you've got this, basically somebody's calling on family to get involved, which within this sort of, if you then zoom out a little bit, it's a sort of macro trend in the society where we're seeing people just in their hundreds of thousands of a certain age, into their 40s especially, just deciding that they've had enough of the 9-to-5 stuff. And then they're dropping out. And what's interesting about this is that it has this kind of ripple effect where they have to then recreate the real world network, which in sort of our age, it became shattered in the 2000s, where everybody went off and everybody became competitors in the market. And it's easy to think that that will be something fixed, and that will just be something that only ever gradually gets worse, and that there'll not be any pushback against it. And I think it's interesting that we see this, it's not planned or it's not coordinated, but there's this trend happening across society. In Britain, I'm not sure what it's like anywhere, but in Britain it is a thing where people are deciding they're dropping out. And when they make those plans, they can no longer sort of depend on the career. And they're falling back on a more organic network, which would be family in this case. And then that seems to have a knock-on effect where more and more people want to get involved. And so you see, after this great atomization and splintering, that a more organic and traditional network is reforming itself. And it's kind of like we've all been through this haze, this crazy haze. And because of my sort of, you know, political views online and my general view of the world, I wanted to do everything that I could to kind of make that happen, you know. So, and what happened after that was, well, I'd like to have a little bit of work done myself so I could create a better space for recording and to write and things. So then that became another thing, which is why I couldn't do audio for a long time. Even now I'm recording this on the phone. And so there's these trends that are happening, which I think is kind of strange, and it's very interesting how they sort of ripple out and how they connect. And I'm very much talking about the real world here. And when we look at the wider political things that are going on in the world, which have, in my view, have just been insane for the last 3 years or so, you begin to see that this is what people wanted all along. And it became this sort of, when people were talking about forming real life networks, it became this kind of abstract thing. It became a principle to express on the internet than actually doing something which is kind of mundane. Because when you form things and when you do things in the real world like that, it is kind of mundane. It is like drinking a cup of tea and having like a bacon and tomato sandwich or whatever. It doesn't have this big romantic politicized appeal to it. But I feel that we're entering a phase where the populist phase and the hyper-politicization of everything, at least on the side of normal people, is kind of petering out. I know people are getting excited about different trends and things, Elon Musk's Twitter or the upcoming election in America or whatever it happens to be. But I mean, maybe something will happen, maybe it won't. But I just think it's there's a trend that we're seeing where people are saying, I've had enough of this kind of thing. Things used to be better. Things used to be better than this. And that kind of leads me on to another thing that I noticed. And so people were saying that the problem with, I do so much on Substack now. I'm doing a couple of articles every week, some of them quite lengthy. I do quick takes and I do me long form analysis. Obviously, I'm going to do more podcasts and things when I get sorted. But people are saying, well, we don't, it takes a lot of time to read an article. And when it's an audio like this, they can just put it on in the background and they can drive to work on this kind of thing, which is all fair enough, because This kind of relates to what I was saying, where it feels like everybody's at their kind of operating at maximum capacity in terms of time, and there's a lot of people just sort of saying, I've had enough. I'd rather take the hit financially than carry on in the rat race, than carry on the 9-to-5 wage slave sluggery. And what's interesting I find about Substack is that I've noticed there's this sort of a huge clique of older millennials and Generation X who are becoming in their own way kind of reactionaries. Some of the big names on there, you know, is it Paul Kingsworth or Mary Harrington and these people? And they're all kind of my age, I think. And they're all, you've got the return of blogging, essentially. And it feels, unlike YouTube, it feels much more personal. Because when you're, I mean, you can do podcasts and everything on there. But as an emerging trend, you know, like blogging was huge in kind of the late 2000s. And then it was crushed by things like YouTube and all of the other video and podcasts basically killed the blog. And now you see that it's coming back. And what I find the difference with it is that it's a much more personal thing. So you're kind of, if you write an article, you're not getting my accent or, you know, whatever, like, sort of things that people are drawn to the video or the audio for, or my general kind of attitude or ranting or swearing or this kind of thing, you know, which I've all done in the past on the video format. But you're getting this kind of what I really think about things, kind of concentrated and distilled. And now, obviously, it's not just about me. It's the general way of blogging. And this, to me, is another sign of what I was saying, where people are kind of burned out with the big show, the big let's get stuck in the social media cycle, and let's like instead take a step back. And take our time with things and think things through clearly and not be in this kind of insanity. I mean, if you take a look these days at what they call BreadTube, sort of left-wing YouTube, these big channels, because they get, you know, they get boosted by the system and everything, by the YouTube especially. It's the content that they actually create is just dog shit. It's just seeing what's trending on Twitter, seeing what the latest outrage is. They've got a sort of 12-hour window in which to get this story out. Tucker Carlson has said something outrageous, or there's this new scandal around Bud Light, and they're just kind of cranking out the kind of talking points of the power structure. It's just like this massive propaganda enterprise. And they got kind of sucked into that and absorbed with it at some point. When exactly the Great Awakening, when exactly that happened, is a subject for discussion. And I feel the opposite of that is kind of emerging on something like Substack, where you've got people who are back to writing and in a way checking out of the kind of the algorithmic crunch and churning and just constantly chasing around after the latest trending subject and things. I mean, obviously people on Substack do that as well. People still write about that kind of thing. Even I do sometimes. It's me quick takes. But still, there is this thing where people are deciding to kind of sidestep it, probably because even if you go back to, say, the beginning of the popular surge of 2015 and 2016, like, I just don't understand how long it's expected that people remain within that mindset of this sort of constant trench warfare where every day there's some new thing to chase around after. And so what I'm getting at is that I think the rise and the popularity of Substack, there's also, I mean, it's not as romantic to talk about, but the financial incentives are there as well, because I get like nothing from YouTube. But so there's that as well. But still, I think even without that, there is this return to a more distilled and thoughtful form of expressing yourself, which kind of knocks on with what I was saying before, the general trend of people trekking out. And I mean, when you're in YouTube, you are in sort of, you have to be in lockstep with how you produce content, the length of your content, what your content's about. And if you're on my side of things, you're just walking on eggshells all of the time. That doesn't help either. But another social media trend, which I think reflects so much of this, I was thinking about writing an article about Facebook, because I mentioned, you know, that you got this kind of great atomization that occurred with millennials and Gen X during the 2000s. Zoomers would have been too young, of course. And what kind of tapped into that, I think, was Facebook, the rise of Facebook. When Facebook was cool, I mean, I didn't have the internet until relatively late. I think I got Facebook in like 2009 or something. And I remember how much of a buzz it was. I remember how much like fun it was to get in touch with people who I wouldn't have seen or heard from since, at that time, sort of the mid-90s or something. So it was like 14 years later or whatever. And then you can kind of snoop around. So there'd be that girl that you fancied in high school, and that time she would have been in her 30s. And you can kind of snoop around on her profile, and you can see like what she's been up to, is she married or whatever. And there was a lot of that went on back then. There was this kind of meeting up, and a lot of people to be fair, like a lot of people began having affairs, and a lot of people began rekindling their old, you know, their flames and all of this kind of thing. And there was a lot of trouble as well. There was a lot of sort of old scars got opened up because it was the first time. I mean, people had school reunions and things. But the thing with Facebook was that you didn't actually expect to meet the people from school again. They'd all gone off. You'd all splintered up. I mean, you kept in touch with a few of your mates, your best mates and whatnot. But by and large, like the vast majority of people who you grew up with as a child, in your kind of younger years, who formed you as a teenager, or who you had your first kiss with, or all of the or whatever, and they'd all kind of gone off in their everybody's different directions, and you never thought you'd see them again in the pre-internet, pre-social media age. And then when Facebook came along, that actually happened. And what I think's interesting is that since then, Facebook's become very much like cringe. It's become very much the most of the different sort of social media platforms. It's become the most untrendy, and it's become the and even when you go on there, I mean, it is like pure sort of normie book. And when you go on there, I remember when you used to go on and people would be coming in from the pub and like posting like threats and things on the timeline and talking about drama that went on. But what I think's interesting about that is that you were, I touched earlier on this kind of real life network thing. And in a way, Facebook was that. Facebook was, so you existed in the real world with all of these real people that you had real experiences with, in a much more healthy and organic way. And in a way, Facebook kind of promised to where you as a person could then sort of bring all of that back to life or catch up on where all of these people were now. And of course, in the intervening years, that seems to have happened like less and less. Now, Facebook is regarded as being like the most boring of all of these networks. I mean, believe it or not, I've actually got like a tiny little Facebook account just on the off chance because it's full of people that I've met from all over the place. And you think, well, if I delete that account, those people are gone into the ether forever. But on the other hand, they don't actually contact you anymore. The whole like sort of big meetup thing, the whole idea that I'll keep in touch with that person, and one day I'll send them a message, I can go over to Europe and catch up with the people that I met there, or there's this person. There's always a reason not to message them, and I think what happened is that. People, Facebook represented a part of social media which was still rooted in the real world because it was the people from school. I mean, that was what the pitch was. Like, who did you go to school with in the early days, and who is your family, and all of this kind of thing. But then I think as the age advanced, the digital age advanced, I think what actually happened was that the internet took over and pushed into the background the Facebook app. and all of the real connections were on there. And so what happened was that the social media, the other sites, would pander to you, and you became more and more this sort of atomized person who was then reformed by social media. Or you would find new people on social media, or you would just become a sort of avatar bobbing about. And it strikes me as very strange that here you had like an existing, there's different phases to it, but you would have had an existing real world network, which actually was just your younger years. You then have the chance to reform that and rekindle everything if you just use the app just as it was intended, leaving aside all of the political stuff. I mean, that runs with this as well, because you also get to see which of the people that you grew up turned out to be shitlibs who you don't want to have anything with, or from their perspective, who became sort of reactionary racists or whatever. So that everything became more politicized, and you could sort of do your whole friend enemy thing based on that. But I think what really happened was that the real people who you grew up with just became uninteresting, because the internet was offering this endless extravaganza of new things, new forms, new people, new attention, new ways to get validation with likes and retweets and all of this kind of thing. And so eventually it became where the real world connection was severed again, but this time not because you grew up and went on your separate ways, but because everybody kind of went off in their different directions on the internet more and more. So you end up where you've got somebody that you used to be best friends with, you know, you worked away like I did for a long time. There's somebody on there that you used to meet up in the bar with every night, and they'll never send you a message. You'll never hear anything. Everybody just drifted away and went off. And in a way, Facebook became cringe because it didn't actually manage to sort of hold the line on that. It didn't actually live up to its promise. But I think, I mean, leaving aside the fact that Mark Zuckerberg's a scumbag and everything, the basic premise of Facebook seems at odds with the rest of social media, to be honest, because at least because it's rooted to real world connections, you'd think it would have a huge advantage over the other social media sites. But it doesn't. It's seen as the most cringe, because the other ones offer more of a fantasy realm to go into, to escape from the real, to escape from the kind of unfortunate encounter you had with Jenny Davison when you were 17 or whatever it happens to be. You never have to think that again. When you go into the other parts of it, you can pretend to be some kind of Chad bodybuilder and all of this. So the real people and what comes with actually being in the real world is kind of pushed aside, and we all go more and more into the fantasy world. And so now, despite all of that, I think what we're beginning to see is what I've kind of pompously called the great turning away, because it's in complete it's in a way the opposite of the Great Reset. And the Great Reset is itself kind of a pompous, cringe term, you know, loaded with all kinds of conspiracy and everything. Whatever you want to call it, this thing that began in 2020, which I wrote about recently on the article Borderlords, Kipper and the Great Reset, this thing, which is now 3 years in, everything becoming digital, everything more controlled, digital money, we you know, it's all of the technocratic stuff. And then with the highest rates of immigration ever, which seems to be making people homeless, to be honest. I can't think of any benign reason for the rates of immigration we're seeing whatsoever, which I've also wrote about on Substack. I probably can't get into it here on YouTube. And I think the a kind of organic emergence is the turning away from that. And the way that that's taking form is people dropping out. And in order to drop out, you have to find, reforge these old networks, which I mentioned with Facebook, where they didn't actually, Facebook didn't sustain it. But maybe it will in a way. Maybe you could make it, like, maybe you could, in that way, you could turn their own weapons against them. And this interests me because I don't know, the plans seem to be, people talk about, well, like, you're going to go in the pod, you're going to sit in front of screens all of the time. What happens if there's this genuine burnout with all of this? What happens when people think, you know, it was nice to sit in the brother's garden or my mate's garden and have a few beers and pay for the beers in cash and just, like, it's these simple things. But they, again, you think, well, this isn't what they want in the future. This isn't what's being lined up for us. What seems to be being lined up for us is where you just live permanently online and all this. I mean, they do have that work from home seems to be into the bargain as well. But I mean, you get into the, like, the things with cars and the things with the 15-minute cities, which everybody's getting into that these days. What interests me is that there seems to be a reaction where people are naturally becoming numb with this, more than it being some kind of organised political force. Because you'll notice a lot of the discussion around this is also within, like, the cultural, the social media kind of swamp. It's interesting to have a foot outside of all of that, and maybe even 2 feet outside of it. It kind of means that it isn't so much a political organized reaction, but just a general weariness that you see that people are having. And I think that's very interesting, because it speaks to something of a return to normality. So the last 15 to 20 years would be looked at as some kind of aberration. And you'll see, I mean, as we go into the Rainbow Flag Month, you can see the people who are most have had their brains fried by what we've been through, by the social media thing. And of course, for them, it's just a permanent state. This is what I was saying about the shitlib actual content they produce. Is firmly within this. They can't find their way out. They can't think their way out. They have no frame of reference outside of it anymore. And increasingly, I see people in the real world, you know, they're looking for ways. They're not kind of thinking, oh, well, I need to get a vegetable patch coming before the economy goes down, or before it's all genetically modified, or there's fake meat or whatever. I need digital currency and all of this. It's not so much that, though there is a little bit of it. It's more that people are sensing something, but also that they're just bloody tired. And when you look at what's coming in through the borders, the way the government treats everybody, there's a complete lack of loyalty to the regime and the power structure. And everybody's becoming numb, and everybody wants to step away from it. And it is this wholly unnatural thing. It is what made people who you go on Facebook back in the day and you think it's fun because your best mate from school's back on it and you'd lost contact, and then you find that the it has kind of pulled everybody apart again. And I think that the great sort of turning away is this attempt, at least, to rekindle and reform that. It always brings me back to the David Bowie song "Left Stance," where the Aboriginal kids went into the video. The Aboriginal kids went in and they got these jobs. I think she was on like a till or something, and he was a mechanic or something. It's been a long time. And then they had enough of it. They look at each other as if to say they're not happy, and then they wandered back off and threw a pair of Nike trainers into the bushes. At least that's my remembering of it. Maybe I've embellished it a little bit, or maybe it was just like that. I can't remember. But the idea is a good one. It's this thing where it's not that we're these political reactionaries against it. We're just organically moving away because we just can't keep up with it, and it's exhausting, you know. I mean, the latest trend is this sort of new attack on Lord of the Rings, where they've racially replaced Aragorn. I mean, I'm so old that I remember reading Lord of the Rings. I would have been young, like. But I remember reading Lord of the Rings in 1997. There was somebody, and he was a bit of a scumbag. And he, I don't know where he got them, but he had the three books, the full set, in a big sort of box set thing. And I could tell by the spines on the books that they had never been read before because they weren't creased. So he'd never read them. But this is before the Peter Jackson movies. And it's weird because at that time, Lord of the Rings was something where bushy beard ale drinkers would be into Lord of the Rings. You know, it was a very much a small subculture, and Lord of the Rings itself had a kind of aura around it of being quite dark and quite mysterious and quite. I mean, it was still like a hugely popular book. And you had the Ralph Bakshi kind of, it was sort of half attempt to do it. But still, the whole thing with Tolkien, Lord of the Rings, had a very much its own kind of dark mystique about it. What was it really about? Because this is before the internet, if you go back to that time, you couldn't even really see that much art. You couldn't just go on Google Images and see all of the Lord of the Rings art. You wouldn't have had it. Maybe there would be some program about it on BBC Two or something. And I remember the box set. I lent it off him, and I read it all in like just a few days over Christmas holidays. And I was absolutely just totally addicted to it and totally hooked by it and all the appendixes. But I remember the artwork by Alan Lee, which had it was sort of watercolours, but it really had this mysterious, kind of almost supernatural aura to it, where this world was just so rich and so mysterious, so fantastical, but also it was kind of like a romantic painting of the 19th century that you'd see, but then more than that, sort of hyper real. You would have like a cover on each book. And I remember there was the Witch King on his dragon on one of them, and you looked over his shoulder down toward the Black Gate, they call it. And it all added this very kind of alluring, kind of magical aspect to the work. And then a few years later, when about 6 years later, when the Peter Jackson films came out, I went to see them at the cinema. And I loved them, but it did kind of remove some of that. It did kind of remove some of the mystery and the aura, where now, say, Aragorn was this sort of, he was there, you could see him, you could see him acting, you could hear him talk. And this kind of gets back to what I was saying about Substack earlier. But now, of course, you see that now it's like you see like these shit libs on social media. To them, it's just product. It's been utterly, you know, it's like the sun burning the morning dew off the grass, and it's just there's nothing left to it, as a magical, mystical form, which is kind of like it sits in an odd place of English literature, which is another thing, because you've got to put it within a context of a much larger world of fiction and literature. And of course, it's been kind of wrenched out of that. And then it's had all of its parts broken apart. This isn't even to mention the Amazon thing. And you kind of think, for me anyway, I kind of think I preferred it when it was even before the movies, even before, when it was intact as something special and unique and mysterious. The even great as they were, the Peter Jackson movies took some of that away, and then now we see that it's actually an assault. I mean, he did his best to be respectful, but now it's just an actual assault on the work itself. It's a deliberate act of deconstruction. It's deliberately there to change how you think about it. And they will see it only as a product. So you're not allowed to think of it as anything particularly special, which has a special place in on a personal level, but then also in the cultural psyche in general. And I think this is kind of instructive. This says a lot more, because that runs parallel to this sort of great turning away, this kind of burnout, with this whole arc that we've been on in over the last 10 or 15, I'm not just talking about the Great Awakening, I mean the social media thing itself, where you begin to think it was better. It was better in the early days. It was better before this happened. And I think people are falling back in terms of, not so much in terms of fiction and narrative, but also just when you say, in my case, where I'm breaking me back in my brother's garden, and then, you know, the woman comes out and she's got some sandwiches and some pop, and you think, it's been ages since we did, like, I remember doing things like this and when I was younger, but like, for then, that through that whole arc, we just went off and did our own thing, and then you realize, like, actually it's good, it was better, I'm doing it again. And in the same way, I look at the latest sort of bastardization of the Lord of the Rings, which is a typical thing in the culture war to get involved with. It's a typical thing, and I've spin some hot takes on Twitter. Let's pump out some content. It's like, you just become exhausted with it. And I think this exhaustion is going to be the thing going forward. Obviously, I'm gonna still comment on it along the way, but maybe I'll be wrong, especially with the election coming up in America, you know. But there's something to be said for the wider macro trends on so many different levels. I mean, I've touched on a few here. There's the way that sort of Facebook kind of half in the early days attempted to kind of, without it being planned, it's certainly like a disgusting organization, but again, like, at least you had that organic connection to a real actual network of people in the real world who you actually met, for example, and then there's the kind of the grunt and the grind within the social media shit show, which is all kind of sort of fake. And there's this, you remember the way that work like Lord of the Rings used to be before, in the before times. And you realise that, well, actually, that links up with when we used to actually live outside of this thing, which has overwhelmed the Western world, at least. And this comes, you know, at the exact time that it's expected that we do the opposite. All of the power centres, all of the institutions, the NGOs, the government, the elites, the money system, they've got their plans for this are the exact opposite. It's like, no, the social media sort of atomization, all of this kind of comical, farcical wars online, that's just the beginning. And eventually we're going to ban you. Eventually we're going to get it under control with all the censorship and misinformation kind of blather. And I feel like it's a good time to hunker down and get in, get yourself sorted, get back to sort of normality, or touch grass, as they say. I've cut a lot of grass recently. And because the emerging trends are kind of the opposite of what the elite wants. And I think it's going to be an interesting time. But it's going to be a time when eventually there'll come a crunch. They're on different levels, I think. So anyway, it's just some passing rambling thoughts about things I've been having, folks. So I hope you're all well, and I'll catch you later.